You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, April 16th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District. Today on the program, most of you, I'm sure, by now have heard that, and have seen probably multiple news reports on the horrible bombing that took place in Boston yesterday at the Marathon. At this point, 176 people injured, 17 of whom are still in critical condition, 3 dead, an 8-year-old amongst that dead 8-year-old boy. The bombing took place at about 2:50 yesterday in Boston. Yesterday, Patriots Day. It's a holiday in Massachusetts, and there's also the Red Sox play a morning game traditionally. Got out at about 2:00. The marathon was about 4 hours into the marathon, and so you still had the majority of runners had come across the line, but there were still thousands to come. Approximately 23,000 runners in the race, about 3/4 of whom had already crossed the finish line, so there was still anywhere from 6 to 10,000 who had yet to cross the finish line. The national media had stopped their coverage of the race, and but there was still obviously a lot of local media, and there was still tons of people there. 2 bombs went off. One about 10 seconds after the first. Just the first one was yards away from the finish line. The second bomb went off on the same side of the street, but about a block west of the first bomb. The limitations of this program are such that we don't really have the ability to bring you any news that you're not aware of if you're seeking information on a story like this. And we don't have access to reporters. They're reporting for their outlets at this point. There's simply not a lot of information that this show can provide, particularly because many of you listen to it in a delayed fashion. At this point, there is really no indication of who is responsible or why. The authorities are now saying that the bombs themselves were fairly crude in terms of the technology. Contrary to the first reports, there were no other bombs that were found undetonated. There were reports early on that there was a device and a fire at the JFK library. And I can tell you, I was listening to the police scanners and the cops thought it was an incendiary device. And of course, it gets reported and then it's found that it wasn't the case. So there's obviously, you know, always at the first reports of these things are always pretty questionable. But, you know, what we're telling you now is has been more or less confirmed, but there's not much that's been confirmed. The president just spoke again for the second time since the bombing about a half an hour ago. He called this in the second address, he called this an act of terror as opposed to terrorism. This is not a that is a specific distinction. The president is saying act of terror as opposed to terrorism because terrorism is actually has some legal definition, in the context of law enforcement in this country. The FBI, or via the FBI.gov, 28 CFR section 0.85. There's no single universally accepted definition of terrorism. Terrorism is defined in the Code of Federal Regulations as, and that's CFR, the quote, the unlawful use of force and violence against persons or property to intimidate or coerce a government, the civilian population, or any segment thereof in furtherance of a political or social objectives. So in other words, terrorism is violence that is aimed at civilians with a political, a more or less political objective. It's possible that the perpetrators of this bombing, or the perpetrator of this bombing, did so because they're just crazy. Which is not to say that the people who did this are not crazy by definition, but are just crazy with no other, even internally coherent objective other than to see people die, other than to see things explode, other than to feel like they had some type of power to create this type of horror. You know, anything that we're talking about on this program beyond that is speculation. And there have been reports, and frankly, I can't quite find confirmation. There were early reports in the New York Post, not the most reliable source, that people around the area had had basically tackled a man in his early 20s who was a Saudi national because he supposedly looked nervous. It's unclear whether or not the police questioned him. According to police as of today and federal authorities, no one is being held. Last night, Boston PD and federal authorities more or less raided an apartment in Revere, which is about 15, 20 minutes north of Boston. And it is unclear who they were talking to there. There's been some reports that that person was a Saudi national. Is that confirmed, Michael?
I think it's confirmed that the guy in the apartment in Revere is a Saudi.
From who? Where does that confirmation come from?
That's in the Washington Post.
Okay. So, but they're not holding that guy.
I think he's just been questioned.
He's just been questioned. No one has claimed any credit, as it were, for this, which is atypical of an organized international terrorist organization. This could have been done by someone like the Times Square bomber, who was simply inspired to do it. This could have been done by someone with, you know, this is obviously it was on tax day, which may have just been a coincidence. It was on Patriots Day, which has a history of events happening on or around Patriots Day. McVeigh was on the 19th. I've seen some reports that some people have contemplated that was Patriots Day, but my understanding is that at the time of the bombing, Patriots Day was the 17th. Nevertheless, Waco happened this week, which, you know, if that was not a coincidence, as opposed to just here's where a lot of people are guaranteed to be gathered, and there to be national media, you know, you could plant a bomb out in front of Fenway, I guess, theoretically, but there's no television cameras there. All of those dates could suggest, you know, some type of a right-wing crazy. We just don't know. According to the Herald, a roommate say that the police, this is a Revere, guy who lives in Revere, said that police informed him that his roommate was injured by shrapnel at the marathon before searching his apartment and questioning him for hours last night. So in other words, I guess there is a guy who is in the hospital who...
That was the guy that they tackled at the event.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So that would actually seem like it might vindicate the Post story if that's true.
Okay. So it's possible this guy was tackled at the event. He had shrapnel. He went into the hospital. Authorities questioned him maybe there, and then they went to his home and questioned the roommate. Apparently, they didn't find, well, we don't know what they found. But the roommate is saying that this person's a good person. So, for what it's worth. So just to be clear, now we're talking probably about one person, according to, you know, a report that was just released literally minutes ago in the Herald. So, you know, we don't know. What I think is going to be clear on some level, though, is that if Al-Qaeda was in any way involved in this, if some type of organized international terrorism syndicate was involved in this, they would have taken credit. One never knows, but it seems like it. And certainly, according to the Boston Globe, there is an implication that the authorities perceive this as some type of homegrown attack. And like I say, you know, the limitations of this program are such that we don't have firsthand reporting. By the time you listen to this program, you will probably know more than what we do now. And speculating on this stuff, I don't think does any good. You know, the strange thing about this is that, you know, I've obviously lived for several years in Boston. I grew up 40 miles west of Boston. I went to law school for a year in Boston. I've been to multiple of those Patriot Day Sox games. I've observed a couple of Boston marathons. I distinctly remember being in law school and walking home from law school on Calm Ave that day through Kenmore Square, which is just to the west of where the marathon sort of passes by as it heads down another, I don't know, dozen blocks until it's finished, and thinking, God, I wish I wasn't in law school because everybody was partying. I mean, literally everybody was partying. As I was walking down the streets and, you know, feeling sorry for myself, boo-hoo. And so it's strange to contemplate, you know, one's emotional proximity to an event like this. And because, you know, I had family who I knew were at the Sox game yesterday, and because I knew all those locations and spent quite a bunch of time hanging out half drunk on the Boston Public Library steps and drank all up and down Boylston Street at different times. And, you know, the perspective of being in Boston, you don't contemplate the idea of being hit with a terrorist attack, frankly, because there's this perception of if there's going to be a terrorist attack, or this type of attack, let's say, on the East Coast, they're just going to go to New York. They're just going to do it in New York because there's going to be a lot more media there. But it is, you know, I've obviously, you know, we're talking about three dead. We're talking about 176 wounded, 17 who are critical. Maybe the death toll will rise. Hopefully not. People's limbs blown off. Apparently, according to the doctors that were treating victims, there was a sense that the bombs were placed on the ground or near the ground because virtually all of the injuries took place in the lower part of people's bodies. Some people lost legs. But there was very few casualties walking around with head wounds or with chest wounds. And so it's the doctors at least speculated that the bombs were planted on the ground here. But the, I mean, the point is that, you know, I remember when Oklahoma happened. Obviously, I remember when, obviously, 9/11 was in the city. But there's the authorities clearly don't feel that this is a national threat in the way that they did on 9/11. And so at the very least, despite the fact that we don't know who perpetrated this or why, it's more analogous to Oklahoma. And of course, in Oklahoma, you had literally hundreds more people die. And in some way, maybe we're more sensitized to these things after 9/11. But I think, you know, for me personally, just because I know Boston, because I have relatives who were, you know, not far from there, I'm more sensitive to it. And it makes you sort of, you know, contemplate there's something inevitable that's going to happen, you know, where people are concerned about their own families, and then they are concerned about their own hometown, and then they are concerned about their own nationalities, And there is a inescapable hierarchy of concern that we have. With that said, you know, what struck me was that yesterday I mentioned in passing at one point in the program, you know, 50 people plus killed in Iraq over the weekend. And that was it. Then we moved on. And it didn't seem awkward. It didn't make me pause for a moment that we could just move on and talk about other things and do an interview. The idea of, you know, we had an interview scheduled today. We're going to do it later in the week. But the idea that I could have done that today was, of course, I couldn't even contemplate doing that. Yet, 50 people die over the weekend in Iraq. And in many respects, we are all more culpable in the deaths of those 50 people than we certainly are in the deaths of those three in Boston yesterday. And there's been literally hundreds, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, who have died in Iraq in just as horrific, if not more horrific, circumstances that we don't, but just don't resonate with us in the same way. And, you know, at this juncture, when we don't know who committed these acts, we don't know why they did. The only thing that we can sort of take away from this type of situation is, at this point, is to examine how we empathize with humanity at large. There's been tens of thousands of eight-year-olds, maybe not eight-year-olds, but children, who have been killed in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in places around the world where we're not in any way implicated, who are suffering, and yet we don't contemplate their deaths. Even a fraction of a fraction, to the extent that we're contemplating the deaths of, you know, these people in Boston, or the way that we did in Newtown, for that matter. And some of it is just simply human nature. I mean, I guess it all, in many respects, is human nature. But I think, you know, the challenge for us, among other challenges, which, of course, have to do with civil liberties and the way that we react to this, regardless of who perpetrated this. One of the challenges is to expand our capacity to empathize and recognize the humanity of people who suffer all around the world. And particularly those who suffer as a function of what we do and what is done in our names by our government. So let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about what we know that has taken place there. We're not going to end the show. We'll just keep going. And also, you know, as a coincidence, there is a report that's being issued today by a bipartisan commission that was set up in 2009, right around the time that the Senate Intelligence Committee started to do their report on torture, right after President Obama essentially said, we're going to turn the page. There's a bipartisan commission headed by Asa Hutchinson. Yes, that Asa Hutchinson. And former ambassador to Mexico, Jones. Can't remember his first name. And that report is being released today. Unlike the Senate Intel report, which is classified. But the authors of this report, 11-person commission, say that their work dovetails and is consistent with the Senate intelligence report to the extent that they are aware of what's in it. That says unequivocally, we engaged in torture, systemic torture, following 9/11. And we'll talk more about that report later, but the point is that in the wake of attacks like this, we must make sure that we do not allow the fear that is generated by these attacks, certainly more than likely, that is the intent. We do not allow this to continue to further erode the values that are genuinely important about this country. And it's quite a coincidence that that report's being released today, as if it was some type of reminder. Now, you know, for better or for worse, because this isn't a national threat, maybe we won't see these type of moves, but we're certainly going to see calls for it. And we're certainly going to see all sorts of calls for demonization, and it's going to further, when we come back, we'll talk about the demonization that has taken place. We see some nut jobs on the right demonizing Muslims. We see the Alex Jones people, of course, spewing their conspiracy theories again, sort of missing the point so wildly. It's as if somebody who wanted to miss the point had hired them. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about this. All right, we're back, and a source is now telling the AP that the bombs were made with pressure cookers with metal and ball bearings. Explosives were in a 6-liter pressure cookers and placed in a black duffel bags. A person briefed with the investigation says. So that would be consistent with the injuries being a function of a lot of shrapnel that came from these pressure cookers exploding. And, you know, again, we don't know who perpetrated this, but it is clear from the nature of these devices that these are basically homemade bombs made with a fairly low technology. And we're seeing that no broader organizations are taking credit for this. That did not in any way inhibit some of the basically people who hate Muslims and want to generate fear and distrust of literally a billion people around the world. This guy, Eric Rush, who apparently is a Fox News contributor, I don't know what else he does. I don't know if he's like a radio guy or what.
I think he's like a African-American Tea Party guy. I think that's kind of his angle.
And he tweeted out literally moments after the explosion, saying, everybody, quote, everybody do the national security ankle grab. Let's bring more Saudis in without screening them. Come on. Boston Marathon. Just unbelievable.
What he says next is even
worse. And then somebody responds to him, sweet God, are you already blaming Muslims? And he responds, yes, they're evil. Let's kill them all. And then apparently he later, after deleting the tweets after a period of time, said he was just being sarcastic. You know, what's really reprehensible is if Fox ever lets this guy back on their air. It's just stunning. They're evil. Let's kill them all. Pamela Geller, she is the lunatic who championed the protests to not allow a Muslim community center with what amounts to a chapel inside it to be within 3 or 4 blocks of Ground Zero. And
she also probably runs the premier anti-Muslim website on the internet.
Yes, I don't know what the name of it is. Oh, Atlas Shrugs, that's what it is. And based on that New York Post report that authorities were questioning a Saudi national, she posted on her blog, jihadi arrested in horrific Boston Marathon bombing, which, of course, was incorrect. Then she went on to write, jihad in America, 12 dead, 50 injured. Also not correct. Blood on your hands, she tweeted at Eli Clifton of the American Independent News Network, who responded to her tweet. Shame on you carrying water for murderers, she said to a human rights law student. Another spokesman for killers, she responded to another. Holy war means dead people, she added. Savages, she said to another. Just an example of how the right will jump on this and attempt to exploit it. You had Laura Ingraham already calling for some type of immigration reform because of this. I mean, they will use this to further their agenda of hate because it dovetails quite nicely. We don't know, again, who this person did this or who these persons are. We don't know why. Again, the only lesson we can learn from this is some measure of empathizing with people in other countries who have been dealing with this for years and years and years. And some of whom have been dealing with this as a function of what our government does.
I know we mentioned it earlier, but I think it's worth mentioning again as we're talking about these people. I mean, Pamela Geller there is dropping facts that, well, things that she thought were facts because they cited right from the New York Post. They were the ones who were really, I mean, they were the first to throw out the Saudi
I mean, anybody who's going to read the Post and sort of think that they're getting anything other than a cartoon version of the news at any given time is, it's, you know, caveat emptor. But yes,
she's also, I mean, Pamela Geller is a woman who broke the Barack Obama's Malcolm X's illegitimate child lady as well.
Right.
So this is who we're talking about. But I think what's really disturbing is you have these extremely crazy, horrific people like a Pamela Geller, but they're minutely removed from people who are at like the center of the Republican foreign policy establishment. And that's why this stuff matters, you know, even more deeply than just some assholes on Twitter.
Right. I mean, this is not, I mean, if this was just some assholes on Twitter, it would just be some assholes on Twitter. And you could go to to Matt's site, what is it? Publicshaming.com.
Dot Tumblr
to see more of that. But the reality is that Pam Geller has an audience amongst some of the right wing, some of the Republican, frankly, lawmakers. You know, I mean, she is driving these issues. She's an important figure in that world. And the leap between her and some of these foreign policy experts who are at these think tanks is minute. They are on a spectrum, and they are not necessarily, and they're not, frankly, exclusive of each other. And so, you know, this is the type of stuff that we're dealing with. I mean, who's that guy who was going around saying that Grover Norquist was a Muslim?
Frank Gaffney. Frank Gaffney was, I think, wasn't he on the Defense Policy Board under George W. Bush?
Frank Gaffney was in the Bush administration.
And the Reagan administration, for that matter. And this is a guy who, remember a couple years ago, there was some new seal that was unveiled for some department under the Obama administration, and he said it was like a secret Muslim signal.
Right.
I mean, and this guy is not, again, he should just be an asshole on Twitter, but he isn't.
Right. I mean, so there's a direct line here. And so this stuff is not without, you know, this stuff is not without implication. Now, with that said, there are just some assholes out there on Twitter. And there are also just some assholes in this country. The Westboro Baptist Church, of course, has announced via Twitter that they plan to picket the funerals of those killed in yesterday's bombing attack on the Boston Marathon. I will tell you that as someone who grew up in Massachusetts, hung out quite a bit in Boston, hung out in the parking lots Worcester, you know, for a fun Friday night, drinking beer and driving around in a Chevy Nova, that could get really ugly. Because I still contend that there is no place in the country where more than Boston, where there are people who wear collared shirts and want to beat you up. And I think that's going to be an ugly situation. They're going to need a lot of police presence to protect those people. And if they go and they protest there.
Sam and Michael are both from Mass, and I can tell you when something happens, the smallest of disagreements happen in his office, they're fist in fist. Right?
No, I mean, I'm not. I'm serious. This is
maybe Westboro is performing a service. It would be incredibly therapeutic for the city of Boston.
Right.
To beat down on some Westboro people.
I'll tell you
people.
Something. The thing that I think that people don't understand and appreciate about Boston and about Massachusetts in general, I mean, and I would say I would reverse that actually, about Massachusetts in general and Boston, there is a very, very strong parochial streak that runs through that state. There's this implication because there's universities there, that it's an international city, and in some respects it is. But the parochialism that runs really throughout New England, but in Massachusetts in a way that I think people do not really fully grasp. I lived in the second biggest city in Massachusetts, and there was still some vague distrust of outsiders. And that was that's in the second biggest city in New England. They didn't want a civic center because it would bring in the outside element. I kid you not. It took four referendums to get it through. They were worried about, you know, these strange concerts that could take place there. There is a very, very strong parochial streak in Massachusetts. And I would not want to be, I mean, I would be very surprised if the Westboro Baptist Church coming in there does not provoke some type of serious, serious incidents. And, you know, also in terms of the a-holes, within moments, of course, Alex Jones.
His first tweet about it was within the first 30 minutes.
In the first 30 minutes, Alex Jones not missing an opportunity to make some cash off of this. And don't kid yourselves. I mean, he may be a loon, and it may be unfair to say it's just about cash. It's also just about bringing himself prominence in some fashion. Insisted that this was a false flag operation. Which, of course, is beyond ludicrous. Somehow had a info war or prison planet, whatever the site is, had one of his reporters somehow got into this press conference.
Not just get in, but they had InfoWars mic up
there. Well, you
can
put a mic up there. People don't necessarily notice it. And I believe they were the first question or that was allowed at the press conference. And you got to give it up for Deval Patrick, Governor Deval Patrick, who basically in stride dealt with this. But it just goes to show you that there are... there are nut jobs out there who will take advantage of a situation like this. And all of these, you know, everything that happens feeds into their conspiracies. Gold goes down. It's a conspiracy. Bombing takes place. It's a false flag operation. Let's listen to this question at the press conference.
Have you take any questions?
Oh, sir, why were the loudspeakers telling people when you got this stuff be calm moments before the bomb went off? Is this another false flag stage attack to take our civil liberties and promote homeland security by sticking a hand down on your pants on the street?
No. Next question.
You have said that there's no such.
All right, so there you have it. The guy basically says, is this another false flag operation, take away our civil liberties and takes our guns away from us? And here's the damage that something like that does. Because the reality is that there is a danger we're going to lose civil liberties in the wake of an event like this. We certainly did in the wake of 9/11. We certainly did and continue to do so and have those civil liberties, the diminishment of those civil liberties, codified in many respects by the Obama administration. And the danger of a guy saying there's a false flag operation for that purpose is that it begins to marginalize those people who actually care about the diminishment of our civil liberties. And it's just another example of why I said in the past that if Alex Jones didn't exist, all the forces that act to diminish our civil liberties, all the forces that act to diminish our rights and things like economic justice in society would create Alex Jones to marginalize those positions. But they don't have to, because he's there to do it for them. And speaking, and then we'll go into the better half of the program. But speaking of diminishing our civil liberties, I was watching Hayes last night to the extent that I could. I didn't want to have the TV on and have Myla see what's going on. And so I was watching it on my computer and, you know. But at one point he had on a... I believe it was a former FBI agent who was going through the process of how they would deal with a suspect if they found one. And in the course of describing the process, he said they would probably waive or not Mirandize the guy. And I think Hayes commented on it, but it was brief. And again, I missed a lot of this, but this is very important because apparently, according to Justin Elliott in Salon back in March 24th of 2011, the Wall Street Journal had reported that the Obama administration had created a new interrogation policy in which investigators may unilaterally waive the Miranda warning if they think it's necessary to get timely intelligence from a terrorism suspect. Now, understand, folks, this is different than what the Supreme Court has found in recognizing a public safety exception. There is a public safety exception that the Supreme Court has found in terms of Mirandizing a suspect. The proverbial ticking time bomb or the handgun that they threw on the ground as they were being chased so that it doesn't end up in somebody else's hands. This is not that. According to the Wall Street Journal, it was reported in January the Justice Department had created a new but secret policy on Miranda. That rule, named after a 66 Supreme Court decision, this is Miranda rule, holds that information from an interrogation is inadmissible in court unless the criminal suspect has been informed of his right to remain silent and to a lawyer. Evan Perez in the Wall Street Journal got his hands on Obama's new policy. A Federal Bureau investigation memorandum reviewed by the Wall Street Journal says the policy applies to exceptional cases where investigators, quote, conclude that continued unwarned interrogation is necessary to collect valuable and timely intelligence not related to any immediate threat. Such action would need prior approval from FBI supervisors and Justice Department lawyers. Now, according to this former FBI agent, he did not. That was not part of the process. So we don't know how this has evolved. Now, there is some discrepancy because the Wall Street Journal report said that what would be unchanged is the fact that any statements suspects give during such pre-Miranda questioning wouldn't be admissible in court. That's the situation now. But there clearly has been some change in policy under the Obama administration in terms of Mirandizing suspects that is more or less secret that we don't know about. So we do see a diminishment of our civil rights following these things. But that does not mean that these acts are perpetrated by the government for that purpose. That's ludicrous. And to claim so, all it does is make it easier for the government to diminish those civil liberties because it marginalizes any dissent about them. All right. We've gone long. When we come back, we'll talk about Glenn Beck also. It's a twofer for him. Right? Gold is down. How am I going to use this as a way of making sure that people still buy gold so that I can continue to have my number one, number two sponsor? That, and we will also talk about this report being released today that says definitively and unequivocally this that our government had a policy of torture and executed that policy of torture, and that that policy was illegal according to U.S. federal law and international law. All right, we're going to take a break, head into the better half in just a moment. You can call us at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. If you want to just comment, talk about what you saw, if you were in the Boston area, give us a call, 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM. We'll be back after this.